Everybody hear me?
Yes, sir.
Better than last night, huh? Wow. That's pretty cool. I've been trying to save it. How about that food? Thank you. Thank you guys for that. I appreciate all that hard work. I'm glad I got up here to speak because I was about to go to sleep there. That wouldn't do, would it? Okay. Let's see where to start. You know, I had my thoughts organized last night because I don't like to dwell too much on the problem. Today I don't have my thoughts organized because I pretty much love staying in the solution. Love it. Love it. Guys, told you last night that we didn't have the solution in Dallas. And me and a handful of other guys were thinking the same way. And what happened was I got to thinking, I think, well, how can we get it here? I can, you know, some of us can get together and we can do some small group stuff where we can go through the steps kind of sponsoring each other. Group sponsorship. Well, you know, again, it's a blind leading the blind. We're not really sure what's going on, what this whole recovery thing's really, what this sponsorship thing's supposed to look like. Again, I'm asking the ISO. I'm asking my internet recovery friends what this is supposed to look like. They're giving me this stuff. But, you know, again, we're just kind of groping around in the dark. We don't really know what's going on. I'm reading a book or two on sponsorship, and, of course, that's revealing to me in my fellowship, wait, that's not happening here in Dallas. Okay, so the small group thing is going to be tough and it's going to be long, and I'm not sure I can survive it, but as a weapon of last resort, we can do it. So I thought about, well, I can go to somebody else's recovery, somebody else, some other city where they're actually doing this thing, maybe go on one of their retreats or something, and so have somebody show me, or have someone from a city that's doing a solid job sponsor me long distance, and I meet them halfway on a regular basis to take me through these steps. And I can't afford that. And on top of that, if I get recovered, then I'm alone in my fellowship. I'm one voice. You know, upon reflection, what I know now, that's not a bad thing. That means I get to sponsor more people. That's a cool thing. But you know what? At the time, I was scared. I didn't want to be in this alone. I didn't want to be the only guy in the meeting making sense and everybody throwing rotten apples at me. So I thought about, well, hey, what if we put on a retreat? We invited somebody who knew what the heck they were doing to come in and take us through the work. Sure enough, I found a guy over in Phoenix, Arizona. Good guy, super guy. He came down. He took about 30 of us through all 12 steps in a three-day weekend. We knocked him out. We, except for going out and making our amends, except for going out and carrying a message, we did all 12 steps in one weekend. A lot of people are going, you just can't do that. That's not possible. Guess what? Last month, we did it for the San Antonio retreat, my home group. We went down there and took them through all 12 steps in one weekend. Again, except for going out and making the amends, except for going out and finding somebody to sponsor. It's possible. It's doable. So, in putting together this retreat, I go to my home group where they have $8,000 in reserves. Tell me about the seventh tradition. They've been accumulating funds for years for no stated purpose. Oh my God. And they fought us tooth and nail in that group conscience. Tell me there was no recovery in Dallas. There wasn't. These guys fought us about it. One guy said, well, I kind of thought we'd hold on to the money in case the church needed it. Oh, my God, is that such an outside issue, an outside enterprise? Why aren't we giving that money to the ISO? I don't know. Why are they holding on to it that they can't help us with this retreat? I don't know. We managed to get 3 scholarships out of them. That was it. Guess what? We paid every penny back. I don't need your stinking money. You hold on to it. We're going to go do our thing. So a handful of people from Dallas go to the retreat. People from Arkansas, Wyoming, Kansas, People from New Mexico, over here on the East Coast, they all came because they knew this guy from Phoenix. They all came. We went through the steps. We had 30 people there, and I would say there were less than 10 from my local fellowship. That was the participation level. It was pretty sad. So the few of us that really got something out of the retreat there in the local fellowship, we say, look, we've seen disputes over finance tear a group apart. We're not going to be part of that anymore. We're going to go do our own thing. We've been doing it ever since. We haven't looked back. Guys, my internet friend, the guy that I had come over from Phoenix, I told him where I was, and he said, oh my God, Ken, you've got one of the most incredible resources available to you in Dallas. You need to go down there. I said, what are you talking about? He says, Primary Purpose AA. I said, I've heard about them. I had been talking to another guy who said, yeah, they're the real deal locally. We go down there. The first time I walk in, and the difference between my local meetings, my local SAA meeting, and this meeting were incredible. These guys had something going on. There was something happening in their eyes, and I go, I don't know what's happening here, but I want it in my home fellowship. I want this. The first guy that approached us, he knew we were new. He knew he hadn't seen us. He came up to me, introduced himself. He says, my name's Rick, and I say, I'm Ken. I'm a sex addict. He's chuckling. He says, this will work for you too. My God, guys, I'm not a leper anymore. Any other 12-step fellowship I walk in and I tell them a sex addict, they go, oh, this is the wrong meeting for you. These guys embrace me because they're about carrying a message to anybody, anyone. They want people to experience what it means to be in a relationship with their higher power, period. They don't care what your problem is. Their meeting is open all the time. You can come and study the big book with them. Every one of their meetings. But guys, here's the thing. Yeah, they meet 3 times a week. They have 2 big book studies and a step presentation meeting. Step presentation meeting, one person every Saturday that month gets up and presents the steps. First week's 1-3, second week is 4-6, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Good stuff. But the other two, Tuesday, Thursday, they're studying the big book. They're, guys, it is the largest AA meeting in Dallas-Fort Worth. Okay? There are over 200 people there on a Tuesday night. It's incredible. Guys, come see me. I'll take you there. You'll go, I want this in my home group. I swear. It was amazing. Okay, so I'm listening to these guys study. Because I'm not an alcoholic, I don't get to share my experience drinking hope, but I get to listen to theirs. And I'm learning tons of stuff. And the guy who's chairing, you know, we get to the part in A Vision for You where it talks about meetings. The one place in the big book it talks about meetings. One meeting a week. How are they doing 90 meetings in 90 days on that, huh? They're not. They're doing work in the steps. Okay. So in A Vision for You, he's talking about one meeting a week. And he says, you know, most of you guys don't understand. You've never been to sick AA. Most of you come straight from the treatment centers, halfway houses, and wind-up joints. And it occurred to me, wait a minute. The largest AA meeting in Dallas-Fort Worth, and most of the people don't come from other meetings. They come straight from the treatment centers, the halfway houses, and the wind-up joints. What's going on here? Guys, this is what happens in Akron, Ohio, where they have the original AA meeting. They still have one meeting a night. They never adopt a discussion meeting. They either do big book studies or speaker meetings. That's all they do. The other 6 nights of the week, they're out in the treatment centers. They're out in the halfway houses, the jails, and they are carrying a message to the alcoholic that still suffers. They're not going to sick meetings and say, come join our meeting. Those people are discussionized. Forget them. It's going to take tons of energy. We want that guy who's fresh, who's hamburger from the disease. That's somebody who's willing to do this work. All these other people have been therapized and discussionized. They've got relief. They're happy with relief. Great, go be happy with relief. I'm going to find some people who want freedom. You know, right about the time that we were planning the retreat, Some of my friends that were thinking like me said, you know, Ken, there's this new guy in the meetings who moved here from out of town. And, you know, he's saying a lot of the same stuff you are, except he's been sober for a year or two. And so finally I hook up with this guy. And I sit down and I talk with him, and he says, yes, you're exactly right, Ken. This is not recovery. What's going on in these meetings is some sort of pseudo self-therapy sort of deal, but it's not 12-step. And so I talked to him about it and finally asked him to sponsor me. And he says, sure, okay, here's what I want you to do. I want you to read the doctor's opinion and the first three chapters of the AA Big Book. We sat down like 2 days later, went over it, made some identification stuff about the nature of the disease. He told me about some of his story and how the phenomenon of craving starts once I begin, and yet that's not the real problem. The real problem is in my mind. If I could just abstain, none of that would be an issue, but I can't abstain because I have a mind that takes me back to the disease every time. And finally, someone said something that made sense to me. Holy mackerel, now I understand what's going on. Now I thought I was just a weak-willed individual. Guys, when Dr. Bob had been trying to apply the principles of the Oxford groups for years to his alcoholism, but he couldn't do it successfully. He couldn't understand why. He knew the solution was spiritual, but he couldn't understand why he couldn't make it work. Bill W., a stockbroker, meets with him and explains the disease of alcoholism to a doctor so that he understands it. And the light switch comes on and he's able to apply the spiritual principles with success. On top of that, this was the first person that Bill W. had tried this with. Before, he'd been grabbing up each one and saying, you need to have a spiritual experience. And he's scaring them off right and left. This is why we don't talk about religion in our meetings. This is why we keep it focused on the steps. We need to grab up these guys that are hamburger and tell them the nature of the disease and how it's going to kill us. And if they're like us, they're going to identify. And then we're going to say, well, it's a good thing I'm free of that now. And they're going to go, what did you do? Set that up. Reel them in. That's what we need to be about. So he goes on the retreat with us. He takes me through the first three steps. It was really incredible. I'm getting ahead of myself. First thing, he talks to me about the whole God issue, and I said, I got no problem with the God thing. I was able to abandon those old ideas and embrace some new ones. I have some books I can suggest that are just incredible for step two. I won't mention them here because it involves some outside issues. But I'm okay on the God thing. And he says, okay, congratulations, you've completed step one and two. Great, let's move on. He says, what's your definition of sobriety? Well, I tell him, and he says, Ken, that's a good, tight definition of sobriety, but do you know why you have to abstain from those things? And I said, well, do you know why those behaviors are giving you such a problem? I said, well, not really. I don't really understand why this is such a big deal. Why, I mean, healthy people masturbate. Why can't I do that? Well, because you're not like other people. He pointed out, he took me to page 62, selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my trouble. Above everything, we sex addicts must be rid of this selfishness, or else it kills us. Then he took me to page 69, and it says, this is a sex inventory. He says, we looked at our behavior over the years past where we've been selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate. And I go, wait, that's these behaviors. That's why you're addicted to them. They're selfish and dishonest. They're inconsiderate. Guys, and I got to tell you, when we're out there defining our sobriety, we understand that this is a lethal disease. We got no right to play with that inner circle. Let's get it right from the beginning and get all those selfish behaviors in there. Because if I make a mistake, it triggers the craving and I go on another spree and I don't know where it's going to end. We're playing with our lives. I think that's one of the problems we have in our fellowship today. Let's get with it. Let's get serious about this from the beginning. You're not serious? I don't want to work with you. There are people out there dying. I can help people who are dying. I can't do anything with you people who are middle of the roaders. Good luck. Let me know how that works out for you. Guys, he pointed out to me that this long drawn out process of the formal first step and staying in that first step for months and months is nothing but me staying in the problem. I need a solution. He said, the original alcoholics, what made them so successful was that they worked these steps quickly. Edward, do you have your big book? Why don't you turn to page double X? Yeah, actually, let me get it since my study edition doesn't have the forwards in it. Okay. Let's see. Public acceptance of AA grew by leaps and bounds for this were two principal reasons. The large numbers of recoveries in reunited homes, these made their impressions everywhere. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, by the way, really tried, and I'll connect this later on, means quickly. 50% got sober at once. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. Other thousands came to a few AA meetings and at first decided they didn't want the program, but great numbers of these, about 2 out of 3, began to return as time passed. Guys, you study any AA archive in the Cleveland area, they were having a 98+ success rate. Guys, in Reykjavik, Iceland in 2005, they only study the big book. In 2005, they had 100 men come into their group. A year later, 98 of them were there celebrating their one-year birthday. All they have is a big book. We don't see that kind of numbers today. And this is something that this primary purpose group AA pointed out to me. They're having that kind of success rate in the first 20 years, and all they had was the AA big book. 1953, they published the 12 and 12. One man's opinion on the steps. No instructions on how to work them, but lots of people liked it. Why? Because it had no instructions on how to work the steps. I don't have to do anything. All I have to do is theorize and talk about it. By the early 1960s, their success rates had dropped to 50%. 1967-ish, a little article in the Grapevine talked about this new thing called the topic discussion meeting. What happened is there was a lot of guys coming out of treatment centers where they were doing group therapy. And they were showing up in the AA meetings. And they took a few group consciences and said, we want to do something like this group therapy in our meetings. Wait a minute. Group therapy, what's missing here? A therapist. Oh, but our eighth tradition says that we can't have any therapists. If you're a therapist and you walk in here, you're just a sex addict like anybody else. Your opinion counts no greater or lesser than anyone else. That's our eighth tradition. So, okay, great. Now I can talk about anything I want to. Did you hear those words? I want. That's my selfishness. Oh, here's a huge inconsideration, guys. Sorry, I should have silenced that before this started. I can talk about anything in a meeting I want to. Why would I selfishly take up valuable recovery time with my own personal problems when I can call my sponsor and have him help me apply these steps to them and solve the problem? Why? Because I'm selfish. I'm selfish. This meeting is about me. It is not. Okay. So, late 1960s, they've lost their singles purpose. Instead of talking about how to recover, they're talking about any darn thing they want to. By 1980, I think their success rate had dropped to 33%. Nowadays, AA can't brag fellowship-wide, more than 5%. 5%. Somebody who comes in and gets a one-day chip, out of the 100 one-day chips they give out, 5 of those people will be back for their one-year chip. 5. You go beyond that, it's terrible. It's awful. You know, past few years, AA has actually shrunk in size. It's been growing up until that point, but it shrunk in size. Okay, guys, 1976, SAA is formed. First meeting is composed of 8 therapists and a judge. It is based on the model of an AA that is sick and on the decline. That's what we're stuck with, guys. That's what we're here for. That's what we're here in the middle of. This is the bag of stuff that you've been handed. You got to deal with it now. Guys, we went through all 12 steps in that one weekend. My sponsor sat down with me and we went through an inventory. It's a funny thing. You know, in the early days of AA, they got these guys in the hospital and they were detoxing off alcohol. And as soon as their minds were clear, their bodies weren't, but their minds were clear. They sat down and started doing this work. Dr. Bob says, "Are you an alcoholic?" And of course, if they said yes, okay. "Do you believe in God?" "Yes." "Okay, let's get on our knees and say a prayer." 1, 2, 3. Bing. That's as quick as it went. Guys, turn to Dr. Bob's story. Dr. Bob's story is page 166. Yeah, here we go. A co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, the birth of our society dates from his first day of permanent sobriety, June 10th, 1935. June 10th, 1935. To 1950, the year of his death. That's just short of 15 years. Okay? You do the math on that. That's about 5,500 days. Okay? He carried AA message to more than 5,000 alcoholic men and women. He wasn't taking weekends off very often. Guys, these guys are shaking so bad from alcohol withdrawal that they can't write their inventory. Dr. Bob is the first man to take another man's inventory. He's sitting there writing it out for him. And he does it in one night. One night. That's how it works. 1, 2, 3. We're going to write out your inventory. I'm going to leave you for a little bit. You're going to look over your work. You're going to say your 6-step. Yeah, I'm ready to be done with this. You're going to say your 7-step prayer. You're going to ask yourself if you're willing to make amends. I'll be back in a couple of hours. We're going to start about 10, 11, and 12. Boom, we're done. We're done. Yeah, he's doing some prep work. His proteges are out there visiting this guy in several days in succession, telling their story, and they're going, "Wow, you're free. Wow, you're free. Wow, this must work." That's what they're doing. That's what they're doing. So where was I? So we went through, he sat down and he helped me do my inventory. We wrote my inventory out. And guys, here's this ridiculously long, complicated thing that I've been shown over the years about the steps and how it's supposed to be this, that, and the other thing, how much it's supposed to be about my family of origin, how much my inner child, and all this other stuff that has found its way into our program. And yet, he lines it out so simply. Who are you mad at? Why are you mad at him? How does it affect you? It's that simple. And then we did the 5th step and he said, "You're being selfish here, 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 and here." I go, "Holy mackerel. I'm a selfish, self-centered individual. No wonder everybody's pissed off at me. No wonder I'm pissed off at everyone else." And all of a sudden, pissed off went away. Because I saw my part in this. I had power in each one of those situations. The next thought was, well, wait a minute. I can show other people how to do this. This is simple. It's not easy. It's simple. I can teach this. And they can deal with this same, they can be free of this stuff just the same as me. Oh my goodness, all of a sudden I've been given a purpose. We've been talking about this weekend. It's the most beautiful gift ever God ever gave to me was a purpose. The depression disappears. Now I've got meaning in my life. I can help somebody see what stands in the way of their relationship with God. Guys, I thought it was really cool to see my part in this stuff. It was very freeing. It was very exhilarating. It made me happy. I felt free and happy. But God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. Because there was something missing. You know, got out there, did some amends, got rolling on this stuff, practicing at 10, 11, and 12. Good stuff. Keeping an eye on these character defects, searching for God's will in my life. It's good stuff. Great stuff. But guys, there is nothing like it. There is nothing like it. When you're sitting down with your protege and you're doing that fifth step and you see the lights come on, there's only one thing more beautiful. And that's when you come in your meeting and you see that knucklehead you just took through the work and he's got some other little knucklehead and they're sitting across the table from each other and he's reading in the riot act out of that book. And you start to see people's lives come back together. You start to see miracles happen. And you just want to hit your knees and say, God, thank you for letting me be a part of that. Thank you for letting me witness this. Can I do it some more, please? It's amazing. Utterly amazing. You know, a vision for you says, working with others says, we are sure you do not want to miss this. I'm certain of it, guys. I'm absolutely certain of it. I'm going to talk a little bit about why it's important to get through these steps quickly. Something my sponsor showed me early on. Page 24, the italicized paragraph says that we're out without defense against the first rank. Thank you. Page 24. It says, the fact is that most sex addicts, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in acting out, or addictive sex, or selfish sex. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into the consciousness with sufficient force the memory and suffering, the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first trigger. Guys, what that says to me is after I've been through a spree, I've got enough pain and remorse and fear to keep me on the straight and narrow for about a week. When that week is up, the pain, the fear, and the remorse, they start to dissipate. They're a little less painful. They're not bothering me so much. For the next 3 weeks, I'm going to start entertaining little ideas. Oh, well, I could just look at bikini pictures. I mean, I could see that on the street. That's no big deal. I mean, it's not pornography. Start entertaining these lurking notions. And they grow and they grow and they grow and they grow. And if I'm not acting out before the month's over, I've got a plan in place. It's just a matter of time. It's just a matter of life looming large on me and giving me an excuse. Well, I deserve it. I've had a rough day. Or, I deserve it. I've had a good day. Guys, Chris R. loves to do this. Show of hands. Not Chukosis, you sex addicts. How many of you acted out when things were going really bad on the job? Okay. How many of you acted out when things were going really good on the job? It's not my external circumstances that drive my addictive self. Guys, the reason for my addiction, and this is the core of my selfishness, life brings pain. That's a fact. All the normies out there have resigned themselves to that. All the earthlings, they understand that they're going to experience pain and loss in life. That's just the way it is. We addicts, we don't want to feel pain. I don't want to feel uncomfortable. Did y'all hear those words? I don't want. That's my selfishness. So what happens? I don't learn how to deal with this stuff. Guess what? I don't grow into an adult as a result. I'm still a spiritual 12-year-old. Because guys, if I avoid the growing pain, I'm not going to have the growth. I've got to grow spiritually every day. To do that, I'm going to have to embrace the pain. And God's going to show me how to do it. He's going to tell me, I'm right there with you, Ken. It's okay. I still love you. And you can do this. Okay. So then Sandy's going to return within a month. Okay? That's one reason I need to get through this. You turn to page 118 down at the bottom. It says, we do not like the thought that the work of another alcoholic or sex addict or a book has done in a few weeks that for which we have struggled for a lifetime. If they had meant a few months, they would have said a few months, right? If they had meant a year, they would have said a year. A few weeks. That ties it in. The success rates is the second reason. Guys, if I have a deadly disease, don't you think I want my best chances for getting past this? I do. Those success rates are incredible. Here's another reason. I'm a smart guy. I'm a good problem solver. Most of my life, I've seen some problems. I'm good at solving them. Good at it. You give me some time, I'm going to try and apply this brain to these steps. And I'm going to try and think my way through a spiritual experience. Doesn't work. Doesn't work. That's why I have to move faster than my brain. I was working with a guy recently, and we got up to step 9, and he said, well, Ken, wait a minute, I'm being overwhelmed. And I said, come on! Keep that brain spinning. We don't want it involved. We want to bypass that sucker. We want it confused. Because it's what's keeping you sick. Okay, Ken. John, okay, let's, all right, okay. Calm down. I'm getting a little more lathery today, aren't I? I didn't get any on you this time, did I? Okay. Another reason. Step 10. Step 10 is supposed to be steps 4 through 9 scrunched into something I can do to apply to any problem that pops up in my life. It's not of an end-of-day inventory. It's a spot-check inventory. It's not something I do at night, unless something happened at night. It's something I do when I notice my serenity's gone. That's step 10. I look at step 10 and say, hey, where have I been selfish, dishonest, and concerned? You know, where have I been resentful and fearful? When these pop up, I ask God to remove them at once. I get on the phone with my sponsor and I say, hey, you know, I just had a spot check inventory and this happened. This is what I found in the inventory. And he says, yeah, that's a good inventory, but you know what? There's some self-seeking there too in this spot. I look at that and I go, yeah, you're right. There it is. And oh, I see some dishonesty here. Ooh, yeah, there is. I didn't see that. Ooh, I'm doing that with my boss. Holy mackerel. You know, it's mutually beneficial. The next thing is I look at if I've harmed anyone. I talk to him about it. And he says, yeah, you need to go apologize to this guy. And I go over there and I say, I was wrong. And selfish in my relationship. If you have, I make that right. Move on. And then I resolutely turn my thoughts to someone I can help. Resolutely. I'm resolved to go help someone. In the 10th step, what's most beneficial to my recovery is to go help another sex addict. The next most beneficial thing to me spiritually is to go help someone I don't care for too much. The next most beneficial person for me to help is someone that's subordinate to me. So that's step 10. It's a compression of 4 through 9. If I have a model of working the steps that takes me 18 months. How am I going to compress that down to solve daily problems? I can't. A model that takes 18 months, I better not have any more than one problem a month. But I have five problems a day. I need a model that can help me solve any problem within 15 to 20 minutes. That's why we move through the steps quickly. Okay. We were talking about this earlier. Page 70 says, you know, if sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. It quiets the imperious urge. When nothing else will, it takes us out of ourselves. It says on page 89 that, you know, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity against addictive sex as rigorous work with other sex addicts. Okay, if the most effective tool in my arsenal against this addiction is to go help someone else to practice step 12, don't you think I need that in my pocket while I'm going through withdrawal? I do. I need it. I gotta have it. That's why I must get through these steps quickly. Quickly. Bill did it in 9 days. Dr. Bob got up to step 9 in 2 weeks, balked, got drunk for a week, came back, did his amends in one night. The next morning he woke up and said, Bill, don't you think we better go find another alcoholic to help? He knew he wanted to stay sober. And that was the way to do it. That's why we have to go through these steps quickly. Guys, made this joke with Bart earlier. last night around the campfire, they're talking about some silly 6 degrees game they play. And so, you're not sponsoring enough people! Did this with Carol Ann at the convention. We were sitting in there in the bookstore, and we're talking recovery stuff, and she says to me, Kim, do you follow baseball? And I said, baseball? How do you have time for baseball? I don't have time for baseball. You're not sponsoring enough people. I symbolically throw my stuff down and say, you need to sponsor more people. Walk down. Everybody's laughing. But it's the truth, guys. I'm busier than a one-legged man in a butt-kicking contest. They're coming out of the woodwork at me. I can't stand up here and face this tidal wave alone. I need you. I need you in the trenches with me. I need you standing side by side, shoulder to shoulder, taking this thing on. These people need help. They're dying. We need you. Get through this work and get to work. Guys, the only reason for steps 1 through 11 is so that I can have a spiritual awakening to show someone else how to have in step 12. The whole program, the purpose of the program is step 12. The program has no other reason for existence. Step 12 is what we do. And guys, last little bit. I can't stay sober on an 11 and a half step program. I can only stay sober on a 12-step program. You know, I've worked with a girl long distance, and I thought she had seen what she was supposed to see in the inventory. She had done the work. She'd done some, gotten started on her amends. She was doing 10, 11 pretty good. And, you know, it's time to start practicing step 12. And she had been talking to her therapist, unfortunately, and her therapist said, this is too soon. You need to work on yourself more. You can't practice step 12 yet. Guys, it's not quantity of sobriety. It's quality of sobriety. Guys, there were people in my meetings that had quantity, and I didn't want what they had. If somebody had been through this work and exhibited the fire in their eyes, if they were 1 week sober, I would have grabbed them up and said, what did you do? Show me what you did. It's not quantity, it's quality, guys. You got to get out there. If you expect to get quantity of sobriety, you got to go carry a message. You're not going to get long-term sobriety unless you start carrying a message. And guys, I want to be real clear on this. We're not in the results business. The step is really clear. We tried to carry this message. It doesn't say we succeeded. We're in the seed sowing business. God's in the recovery growing business. We need to remember our role. Our role is to cast the seeds out there. His job is to take care of the rain and sunlight and germination, all those things that only God can handle. Life. He makes life grow. He makes spiritual life grow from the seeds we plant. The next thing, and I made this point earlier, it's the little words in these steps that count so much. Two, we tried to carry this message to the sex addict that still suffers. This is not about sitting in meetings and waiting for them to show up. This is about getting out there and telling them, we had a problem and we recovered. If you find you have the same problem too, come see us. We might have a solution for you. That's not promotion, guys. It's not promotion. It's just telling them we're here. It's giving them the tools to identify the problem. That's all it is. Once they identify the problem, we can say, well, okay, that's great. We found something that worked for us. If you want it, come on down. We'll show you how to do it. I show up. Sit your ass down. Shut up. Okay. Maybe a little more gentle and loving than that, but at the same time, somebody speaks out of turn in my meeting. I may not single them out right in the meeting and embarrass them and everything, but I might pass them a note. Or I might grab them up after the meeting and say, you know, you haven't had this experience yet, so you can't really share your experience until you have. So why don't you listen to those of us who have until you get there. We'll be happy to hear you when you get there. Guys, we need you. You know, God didn't give you that spiritual gift so that you could go do a hobby. We don't have time for that. God didn't give you that spiritual gift so you could go let your soul sing or play or whatever. No, we got work to do. God gives you the gift of sobriety because He's got a job for you. And guys, there are going to be people out there that I can't help. God has given me certain life experiences. We were talking about this. God has given me certain life experiences so that I can help certain people. I often wondered why He made me sit in those sick meetings for 4 years before I found recovery. But guess what? I have a message to carry now. I see how my experience can benefit others. I thank Him for it now. I was miserable then, but now I'm going, wow, you know, this is helpful. I had those experiences. I can help certain people with certain things. But there are going to be people out there that I can't help because I haven't had those experiences. John here has been given certain life experiences. Because God has a plan for him to help this guy over here and this guy over here because they had similar life experiences that I didn't have. He's going to be able to show them their truth easier than I. That's why we need all of you. We need all of you. Because each of us brings uniqueness to this and we can work with certain people. And certain people we can't. We've been uniquely gifted, each one of us, with experiences that can only help certain people. So that's why we need each and every one of you to get through this work quickly and get your butt out there on the front line. We don't have time. People are dying. If you're biding your time. Oh, I feel like I'm going through this too quickly. How selfish of you! get your ass through this work and go help someone. You're struggling in your disease. Guess what? You're not helping someone. The book is very clear that if we can't meet these conditions, if we are not in fit spiritual condition, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. It's very clear. Guys, there's a couple of promises in the big book that I love. One of them's on page 68. It's one of the fear promises. Just so much as we trust and rely upon Him and do as we think He would have us, does He enable us to match calamity with serenity? And then over in Bill's story, it talks about, for if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he would not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. Guys, like I said, life's going to bring pain. If you're going to survive that, you've got to get out there and help someone. 2.5 years ago, we had a little water incident at our house. It was a flash flood. We had 13 inches of water in my house. A little lessons about flood insurance. It covers what is part of the house that was damaged by water. It does not cover contents. It does not cover outbuildings. It does not cover contents of outbuildings. It does not cover about the things that are subcode that they find behind the sheetrock. We're in debt up to our eyeballs, guys. I don't know if from one week to the next we're going to have to declare bankruptcy. You see how I'm worried about it. God's got us taken care of. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. Don't know. Doesn't matter. God's got it taken care of. We couldn't live in our house for 6 months. We slept on my mother-in-law's floor. How many of you love your mother-in-laws? I love my mother-in-law. She's nutty as a bug. She is. She has to have the TV on all the time. Try to get some quiet time with that, huh? Anyway, love her. She's a sweet lady, really. And no, she won't be listening to this CD, so I really mean it, okay? About 6 weeks after the flood, I don't have kids, by the way. I have dogs. And they are part of my family. They are my children. 6 weeks after the flood, one of my two dogs stops eating and dies 3 days later. And he was the second dog I've ever owned. The first dog I'd ever lost. And it hurt. It hurt a lot. You know, he died in an animal hospital in unfamiliar surroundings around people he didn't know. And that breaks my heart when I think about it. It tears me up. And all I could do for him was carry him out in a cardboard box, cardboard casket, dig a hole and a final resting place for him. That's the best I could do for him. And guys, in the midst of all of that, I'm sober. Yeah, I'm experiencing a lot of trials and tribulations in my life, a lot of hard spots. Life is looming large over me. And I'm sad, and I'm stressed, and life's tough. It's a real bitch. But I'm sober. And on top of that, and I'm not saying abstinent. Remember, there's a difference between abstinence and sobriety. I am happy, joyous, and free in the midst of all that. Why? Why? Because it says it on page 14. I was continuing to work with others. If life is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. Guys, you know, I don't know sometimes where the next bill money's coming from, but I've done all I can. What do I do now? Well, I stop worrying. I take myself down to the halfway house, and I find out if there's somebody there I can take through the steps. Because that's what God wants me to do. God, we all of us, want to have all of our bills paid and $5 in our pocket. You know why? Why we want that $5 in our pocket? So that we can deal with whatever might pop up. God wants all our bills paid and no money in our pocket because He wants us to rely on Him for whatever comes up next. That $5 will come when I need it, but not before. That's what it means. It means when life is chaos for me, I gotta trust that doing this work is what's gonna get me through it. Forget it that it's joyful. Life is gonna loom large. It's gonna happen. All of us are gonna experience some really tough times in our life. But if we're gonna survive that, we've gotta perfect and enlarge our life through work and self-sacrifice for others. Forget the people dying because you won't get out there and help them because you're selfish and self-centered. You want to stay sober? You want to survive those trials and low spots? Get out there and help them. That's what we're supposed to be doing. It's the only reason for... His sponsor, Chuck C., new pair of glasses, points out that everything is 12-step. Everything. It says on page 77, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. What that means, if I'm not actually helping someone right now, then what I'm doing right now needs to be putting me in a position where I can better help someone later. I don't ride my bicycle to work to save gas. I do actually. But I also do it for my health. So I can live longer? No. So I can live longer because on those days that I live longer, I might be able to help someone else. I don't have a house because I want a house. God owns that house. That means when Jerry L. got out of prison, he needed a place to stay and he stayed with us. That's what my house is for. I don't have a car so that I can, you know, go on road trips. I have a car so I can go to the halfway house and pick up Alan and take him to the meeting. That's why I have a car. Everything is 12-step work. Steps 1 through 11 are 12-step work. They prepare us for step 12. So I guess you probably gathered my message for this evening is step 12. That's all I got, guys. That's all I got. Ultimately, you know, my wife is one day going to be taken from me or I from her. My job, you know, one day I'll be too old to work it. My car's going to give out. My health is eventually going to decline. What am I going to do then? I've got a purpose now that I can do up until the moment I die. I've got a reason for living, and it makes me happy, too. Isn't that an incredible thing? Come join me in the trenches, guys. I need you. That's all I got. Thanks.